everyone. We're gonna, well, the persistent online worlds are the flaw of the design, the problems in the persistent online worlds begin in the creation stage where they're being designed and developed. And so that's kind of what we're going to cover here. But before we begin, we'd kind of like to know how hardcore some of you are, or all of you are, and or if there's a few newbies in the audience that need some explaining on what this genre is. So if you've played Ultima Online, raise your hand. All right, if you've played EverQuest, raise your hand. If you've played Asheron's Call, raise your hand. Okay, so if you've played none of those, raise your hand. So do you guys know what the genre is about?
Okay, how many of you have played MUD? There you go.
That's the way to go.
Hey, I'm not that old.
UO, EQ, and AC are basically graphical MUDs for those of you that haven't played it.
You want to begin? Those of you who play MUDs.
You want to begin, Matt?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Okay. First off, we're going to go with the past. MUDs. Does anybody remember what MUDs stand for? There you go. Okay, multi-user dungeon. I forget. Most of the time, it's just MUD, you know? It's a really dirty name for a really great game genre, you know? These were text-based games. You type it in, you type in your action, and, you know, you get three paragraphs describing the scene around you. You type in another, you get three more paragraphs describing everything that changed in the scene around you. Some people loved it. A lot of people really did not because, you know, they don't like to read that much, you know. You know, if you didn't like, you know, pen and paper, you probably wouldn't like MUD. But for those who loved it, they still play it even today. Simutronics is probably the leader in MUDs. They have Gemstone. We were supposed to have somebody from Simutronics here. Cool. We thought you, you know, ran off to Hercules and Xena panel. We were gonna badmouth you.
Go ahead, bad mouth.
No, but you're here now, so you rock. Okay. We're going to speak to her later because they're also developing a graphical MUD, which is called Hero's Journey, which basically they want to make a game with dragons and make it really good. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to do it. The massively multi-user online role-playing game genre started when Origin wanted, or as we know it, which is in the graphical form, not the MUD form. A lot of people, when they talk about MMORPGs, could be referring to MUDs because, you know, there are thousands of people playing those in the same world, supposedly. They just don't see each other visually. They see each other on text, which necessarily isn't a bad thing. The majority of people in the world didn't like it, so it never really caught on as big as graphical MUDs did. Like Ultima Online. Ultima, when did it go into production? Came into production, like, 97?
Live in 97, I think.
Live in 97. I remember first time I saw it personally was in 1996 here at Dragon Con when Richard Garrett, who is a lifetime member of Dragon Con, this is where he pretty much introduced all of his products to the world. He introduced it here at Dragon Con. And he had a computer back in the back with a very early alpha, you know, pre-alpha version of just the interface, really. You know, you could walk around this world and you could click on things. That was it. There was no economic system. There was nothing. We sat there and discussed every aspect of the game that we wanted in it as fans of the Ultimate Series before. And surprisingly enough, nothing that we discussed ever got into the game. Thank you, OSI. That talks about corporate there. We won't get into that right now, but we will later. Believe me, we will. As I said, it went live in 1997. The big thing about Ultima Online was they originally anticipated 10,000 sales, maybe 5,000 people would still be playing it after the first time they plugged it in, and they decided they were going to do open public testing, beta testing of the game. And when it came around time for them to start beta testing, they had 50,000 requests for beta participation. Yeah. They quickly had to change the storyline of the game. Originally, the storyline wasn't about shards or a crystal breaking and the world becoming many shards of the same exact world. I can't remember what the original storyline was. They released it like a year later or 2 years later, what the original storyline was going to be. One of the insiders of it who quit decided he was going to spill the beans because he didn't care anymore. So he did. And we all thank him for that. Because it gave us a little bit of insight into what they originally were going to do. I wish I still knew it, so I could share it with you, but I don't. Sorry. Anybody here know? I guess not. Okay. The early beta testing really revealed a lot of problems that were totally unexpected. Nobody had any idea of what they were doing when they released this game. No, I mean, everything they anticipated never happened, and everything they didn't anticipate happened, pretty much. Though I don't know how you can measure how much they didn't anticipate. Social problems arose. PR problems everywhere. I believe because 10% of the population of the game had nothing better to do because they didn't like the game, then to complain, they made a lot louder noise than people who were actually playing the game and enjoying the game, who were didn't have any time to complain because they were too busy enjoying the game. So I think a lot of bad publicity happened to that game because the people who were having fun didn't have time to complain or time to respond to complaints. You know, that little addiction there.
Their complaints went so far as even a lawsuit went into effect against
OSI. Oh, God, that lawsuit. Players. Class action lawsuit. Did it reach class action?
I think it did, yeah.
Yes, it reached class action. San Jose, was
yes.
it? Yes, San Jose, California. Some lawyer decided they were going to take the case and for suing OSI and who Origin Systems, or what is it?
Origin Systems Interactive.
Yeah, Origin Systems Interactive, who created Ultima Online, or who developed Ultima Online, and Electronic Arts, who publishes games for OSI and pretty much owns OSI. It's Electronic Arts, basically. Anything that Electronic Arts owns or does anything for, they own them, even though it's under a different name for financial reasons, I guess. That's the only reason I can think of, money. But this whole lawsuit erupted because these people bought this game because they thought it was going to be something, and it turned out to be something else. So they were pissed. MMORPGs are not like any other game genre. They thought it was going to be. They built this game like a role-playing game. They built it like a single-player role-playing game. That's their first mistake. They built it like a single-player role-playing game because they didn't know how to build a multiplayer role-playing game. They didn't. Nothing else had been done to this scale. Nobody designed a game for 50,000 people to play. I mean, they didn't even think 50,000 people were going to play it. They only thought 5,000 people were going to play it. And they didn't even design it well for 5,000.
if they had done a little more research or looked at the MUDs out there, there was a real strong interest in MUDs, which should have clued in some of the producers or designers of the game. And yes,
Miss Simutronics over there. What's your name?
Ilanka.
Ilanka? Okay. How many clients to your MUDs did you have around the time that Ultima Online was released, do you think?
Well, we probably had over 100,000 people come through our games. Can anybody hear me right there?
No.
No, we're not on.
You're not on. Technical problems.
Okay, we probably had over 100,000 people come through our games at that point. And I remember talking to the Ultima folks at the Computer Game Developers Conference and telling them, you know, we've learned a lot from our years of doing this, and I'd really like to sit down and help you guys and tell you some of the stuff to watch out for. And to be honest, their reaction was, no, we got it all figured out. And we're not. And I said, well, you know, people are going to be trying to break your game. Oh, no, we have lots of safeties built in. And it was... so it was actually scary for us. If I can talk for a minute.
Oh, go ahead.
Because I would go to the Game Developers Conference, and Gemstone 3, our flagship product, is currently, among the commercial multiplayer games, is the longest running game in the world. I mean, we have characters today that go back...
Yeah, it's running on that Origin 2000 system, isn't it?
We had it on an Origin 2000 at one point. Yeah, actually, we found a computer that's faster right now.
Oh, you found
a
better one? Oh, cool.
So,
because I was talking to your lead technical person, and he was talking about how he had it up, and his uptime was like a couple of years for that server. For one of the
he may have been speaking figuratively.
Yeah.
but
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and we've moved to computers that are more stable now, and so we've been able to run for like a month at a time without a crash. Or maybe we'll have to take the game down to do some maintenance. But Gemstone 3 has been open for over 10 years. I mean, we've got characters in the game today that go back before the internet, before the web. They've been playing the same character for over 10 years. And we've had people try to break us, try to hack us. Some of them have been successful. I can't say we've blocked all of them, but we've learned a lot about what things people will do and how to avoid a lot of that. And unfortunately, we could not get the attention of anyone at Origin to try and learn from our mistakes. I was more than happy to pass along that info to them.
That's probably one of Origin's biggest problems that they went into. Their PR, public relations man, they were deaf to the world for such a long time. When they began this project, they were open arms to anybody who wanted to give them a little bit of info, but they never took it seriously because they just didn't know what they were getting into. Had no idea, as she can testify to. They really didn't. They thought they knew it all, but they just... They were ignorant.
It seems that they were trying to make the biggest, grandest single-player role-playing game ever. And that doesn't work, because in a single-player role-playing game, the monsters you're fighting aren't actively trying to hack your system and beat down other players' houses and things. That's not the way the NPCs think.
But you know, this isn't to say that every other project that Origin attempted was, you know, wonderful. As Ultima fans can attest, you know, Ultima 8 was terrible. You know, Ultima 7, you know, it had its fair share of bugs. All the Ultimas had their fair share of bugs. You know, oh, yeah.
Ascension's the black name on the market. It's like Daikatana.
Well, I... Yeah,
that's funny. You can say Daikatana and people laugh as if it's a joke.
I mean, it's pretty sad when somebody says that your game title and you know all you get is laughs. I mean that's pretty sad. Ultima Ascension was a corporate mistake. I have to say that's a corporate mistake right there. They the way they began it as Ultima 9 and not as Ultima Ascensions as Ultima 9, They completely threw away 2 years' worth of work. They took it, balled it up in a ball, and threw it out the window and said, we're starting all over again. And instead of having a game that they worked 3 years on, they had a game that took them 4 years to make, but they only spent 2 years working on it. And that's the result.
A lot of people say Ultima Online is still in beta testing. It's just a little more costly now to play.
Extended beta testing.
And paid.
Yes.
That you have to pay for. Which, you know, if they came out and said that, I'm pretty sure it would, you know, make a lot of people happy.
It's an evolving world.
Well,
yeah,
you can't. Yes. Certainly true about EverQuest.
Definitely.
Oh, yes.
It changes every day.
EverQuest. EverQuest. Oh.
I mean,
the mini.
When you're in an online world like that, things are constantly evolving. Players are constantly thinking of new ways to destroy your system, and you also have to think of new ways to keep them entertained. Exactly. A player is not going to be interested in playing the same game online for 2 years unless new features and new lands.
3 years for those of you playing Ultima Online.
That's true. It's you constantly have to bring new things into the picture, and whenever you bring something new in, something old is going to break. It's almost guaranteed, so it seems.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, dude. Let get into the mic so we can. We're recording this, so we'd like to wait for you to get the mic before you speak.
Oh, thanks. You've been comparing single player games to multiplayer games. You said Ultima Online's problem was a single player game, whereas, like, I guess EverQuest is like a multiplayer. What's the difference?
No. They designed it. They had the single player mentality when designing a multiplayer game.
What does that mean?
When they were designing it, they didn't take into account that players and users would be interacting with their world in ways they weren't planning. When you're designing a single-player game, you know exactly what's happening. There's no outside forces involved. But when you have something with, you know, 5,000 users on a single server, or more in the case of some upcoming games, there are people doing basically things that the engine doesn't expect, and also scamming other players, killing other players, things like that. There were new issues that they really waded into for the first time.
So what does one do to stop that kind of stuff?
Design a good game.
but I mean, seriously, what will be a... I mean, people are going to be scamming, they're going to be hacking. What are you going to do to make the game different? I mean, you're saying that it shouldn't be a single-player game. What are you talking about?
One of the solutions that many online gaming companies have developed is to try to keep as much of the game server-side as possible. One of the problems with Ultima Online was a lot of the computing was done client-side, and thus you could create third-party programs to manipulate the computing that was done on the client-side. But if you put as much stuff as possible on the server-side, then third-party programs can't reach onto your server and manipulate
it. It's a learning experience. No one could have made Ultima Online to be a perfect game, I don't think. It was the first time a project of this magnitude saw the light of day. I mean, Ultima Online and EverQuest are usually referred to as first-generation massively multiplayer online games. The betas for everyone else, the upcoming games, Anarchy Online and Horizons. Well, Horizons is having some economic problems right now. But Atriarch, Hero's Journey, etc.
Many online RPGs have go ahead.
No, this is kind of a response to the comment about what can we do to stop that. My comment on that is why do you want to stop it? That's the way the real world is. And what the gaming community is trying to do is create online games and create virtual worlds that emulate the real world. And even though we're dealing with fantasy environments and simulated scenarios, we're still trying to make the games as realistic as possible. And one of the things I don't have a problem with player killers. I don't have a problem with people messing with the game, because that's the way the real world exists. And if we're going to advance not only technologically but as far as the reality of the game and the virtual reality of the game is concerned, we need to accept these realities in the game that we have already accepted in the real world.
Okay, there, PKing, that's an end-game situation. Okay, I can respect that, okay? Personally, I like PKs. I'm not a PK, but I like them being there. It creates a feature to the game that wasn't originally intended. But out-of-game programs, third-party programs, those I have a real objection to.
Yeah, I'm not at all referring to hacking, external hacking of the system itself.
That's not
I'm
exactly
referring to playing
that's
within the bounds
game.
Of the game.
But within the game, okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, in-game manipulation.
Is this one working? Okay. Yeah. You've got a really, really good point, and it really comes to the battle between a really accurate simulation versus a game, versus some form of entertainment. And what we found is that if you make it a very, very accurate simulation, meaning that if somebody wants to attack somebody else, they attack them. If they want to scam somebody else, they scam them. What you have over a period of time is a game with nothing but scammers and attackers, because everyone else has said, I don't like this, and they have left. So the trick is to come up with a game that allows for all of the different personality types. So if you have people, like there's someone at this table or like yourself, that really enjoy the PK, that you find that exciting, that's an invigorating part of the game design, we want to have a game where you can do that as long as you're involved with other people who think in the same way. But we will also want to have the same part in the community for those people that don't like getting attacked, that are logging on to have an entertainment experience safe, like avoiding the streets of downtown where you're likely to get mugged. They don't find that fun.
Okay. I agree. My only response, and it's going to be very brief to that, is that yes, that is that rent that takes the fun element away from it. However, if you have a situation, the real world is not only scammers. The real world is not only PKers and con artists. There is an element of both. And if your game, when you become a PKer and you become a scammer, if your game becomes off balance to where only the PKers and only the scammers succeed, and to paraphrase what you said, there are only PKers and scammers out there in the end game of it, then your game has failed.
Right.
In a
As
simulation.
An example, EverQuest, PK servers. Nobody plays on them for the sole reason that if you try to start a character on a PK server, you're dead.
You get killed, exactly. But if your game
because
is good and it's
is
almost
advanced
a
so
test.
Past you that it's impossible to hunt in what are called newbie areas where low-level players start off because high-level characters run in there as soon as you pop in and kill you. And that's it. You cannot play on
it's
those servers.
It's Darwinism on a virtual level. If you get scammed, you die. The real world works that way. Why should our simulations not work the same way?
The real world the real world does work that way. However, we're also not paying $10 to the real world every month asking for entertainment.
I'm paying taxes.
Is the government bringing us that much fun?
Oh yeah.
I agree with what you say. But yes, if we're going to try and be real with our simulations,
there
there
should always be the element of cutthroats and thieves and fear.
Okay, we visited all point of views on this topic. We got to move on, though. Sorry
on.
About this, but, you know,
one second.
This is going to be a problem with
one
this
second.
Forum, though. Okay, go ahead.
Actually, I had a reply to him. The real world, well, no, the real world doesn't work that way. If you crash my computer because you're screwing around with EverQuest, I can't do anything to you. If you hit my car and take off and I get your license plate, I have my insurance company on your ass, I have the police on your ass. Huh. There are backups. The police don't care if you crash my computer. For all the grief it gives you, it gives me, the police don't care.
Yeah. If I crash your computer and you can prove it to me,
give the
you
FBI
can have
a call. They love
the average user doesn't
if I
know
can
how.
If I can prove it, and I got news for you, the New York City police have better things to do. They don't care. If you hit and run, they care.
If you can't prove I crashed your computer, I go to jail. Period.
They don't care as much about that. In the real world, if you damage me, I can go after you.
Okay.
They don't care about my computer.
Excuse me. We got to change the topic here. Does anybody have a question on another topic? Okay. You. Back there. Run.
Thanks. And again, this is just to change the subject, but one of the things that I find most disappointing in MUDs and other graphical massive multi... I don't even know exactly what the word you're using is. But,
games.
But regardless, one of the most disappointing things is that you can't change your environment. You have a static world that you interact yes. with. You have solid walls. You have solid trees. You have solid rocks. You
that's
can't
only
move
true.
Any
that's
now.
A limitation of technology.
And people. That's what I wanted to ask you. Where is this technology going in the future? Do you have any idea of how...
Climate systems. I believe... So I didn't want to bring this up until later, but a game that I'm currently working with an associate of Loki Software, which any of you Linux people really know who Loki is. They're really cool people over there. I'm working with one of their programmers on a project that's really in the early stages. We're really in theoretical terms right now. We're just getting our software running. We're talking about doing a, you know, I'm just calling it like a particle system where, you know, we have our basis of life, you know. We have rocks, and you can move rocks, and you can move trees, and you can cut down a tree.
So you're saying in your system you can move anything you want to.
A lot of games are looking at
one of the things we want to really get into is digging a ditch, you know. We want to do that. We're not sure we can push it that far yet. You know, it's cost effective. You know, do you want to spend 10 years developing a game that can do that? Or well, do you want to develop a game in 2 years that people can enjoy what you've done so far?
Some two-year games are looking into that. Some of the bigger companies that have the money to put into it. Atriarch, for example, which will be coming into beta and release in 2001, is hoping to have fully scalable, multiple terrain, dig a ditch, build a city, move the river, anything. Though it's going to be in real time, so you obviously can't just walk out and have a ditch teleport in. It's
right, but that's definitely something that I would like to see in
yeah.
We've all wanted
gaming.
To see that.
Up until now, that sort of thing has been limited to housing in Ultima Online, and other than that, there's not really many worlds that have allowed us to
because
be interactive with the basically. Landscape.
I mean, basically, you got to start from scratch when you do something like that. You can't take something that's already existing. And to start from scratch on something takes a very long time to develop. For example, EverQuest, it's based off of Quake. I mean, they're not going to say they stole code from Quake Engine. But considering the lead developer was a programmer on the Quake Engine, you know, have to jump to conclusions there. You know, they already had... So, basically, EverQuest is really based off the Quake engine, and you really can't do that with the Quake engine. A lot of things today are based off of prior technology. If we want to do something like that with terrain development, you know, they got to start from scratch, and it takes a while to do something from scratch.
All right, we have a
question
back there.
In the back.
You.
Have there been any moves to sort of set up a basic... I don't know what you'd call it. Maybe a physics engine that has basic laws like gravity.
Have you heard of the game Trespasser?
No.
Oh,
Trespasser was a failed experiment into the physics engine.
It was. I mean, as far as physics go, it was a great. You know, you throw a stick into water and it floated. You throw a rock, and you know it sank.
But I'm
if
sure
you
it was
threw
horribly
a bigger
slow.
Rock, it made a big splash. You know, it was great for what it was.
It wasn't
took them
designed
years.
To, yeah.
to make it, and they spent so much time on the engine that they had no real storyline to it.
It also...
You know, they spent the last week of development putting a storyline with the engine.
Well, has anybody tried to take an engine like this and add a decent storyline to produce
but,
a...
But also, one of the things they found in developing a physics engine was it was too realistic. If you had a gun in your hand and you accidentally hit your hand up against the wall... Your gun fell out of your hand. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm trying to fight somebody, I don't want to have my gun fall out of my hand. Even though it's realistic, but, you know, it's not practical.
Not that he fights people.
Yes, we don't let him.
So, you know, they're having to test it, you know? That was a failed experiment. Maybe sometime in the future, somebody will come out with a... real physics engine,
but nobody's
that will
working
be
on them currently. That's
well, Atriarch has the closest thing as far as the online worlds go. I don't remember what exactly they're calling it, but solid physical entities will all have realistic physical properties, though water is still kind of questionable because fluid dynamic physics are extremely complicated. It's as for Trespasser, one major problem with its release, why it probably wasn't as well known as a lot of other games, was it wasn't designed to run on any computer that was out in that yes. year.
You can't even run that game on today's computers. I mean, you can go buy an Athlon 1 gigahertz, and it will be slow.
It was a 1998 product, yes. by the way.
And it'll be slow on today's computers, and it'll probably be slow in the next... It will take a couple years to make a computer that game can run on. I mean, that's pretty pathetic.
We have a question in the back.
Yeah, you were talking about storyline. Realistically, if you are dealing with a massive multiplayer online game, probably 90 to 95% of the interaction that your customers are going to have are either going to be with the system or with other players. So how are you going to impose or form or whatever a storyline that will, A, be random, because otherwise within 20 minutes you'll have it up on the web somewhere of go here, do this, or how are you going to get the players to play nice with each other or play mean with each other if you need to be?
Okay, I'm going to take this one because I'm with AO and Anarchy Online, which is being developed by Funcom, which is a Norwegian, I believe, Norwegian/Irish company. Well, they got offices in Dublin and offices in Oslo. So, I mean, it's really an Norwegian-Irish company.
It actually is. That's the bizarre part.
Yeah. And the guy who owns the company pretty much can speak English better than, you know, Americans. It's really weird when we met him at E3. Okay, this is the Anarchy Online webpage up here. As you can see, beta sign up. Anarchy-online.com. Beta sign up. They start at the end of this month. Beta will begin at the end of this month. That's their official announcement.
When did you sign up?
There was no notification email sent out when you signed up. Basically, they're not notifying anybody.
Notification will be like last minute.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of criticism that people don't know if they got the right email addresses, if there was a typo, but it'll be last minute.
If you got that little screen that you have registered, you have registered. What?
Okay, basically what we've been talking about a lot has been doing with current RPG or current online RPG real world perpetual world technology. The interface to such technology has been limited to visual and audio, and textual is a subset of visual. Where could we possibly look to go past those two senses?
In the next 10 years, nowhere.
Nowhere. How far have we gone?
Because they will not go anywhere for the sole reason that nobody's developing hardware. Nobody's developing any. I mean, there's some.
Oh, sure.
No, we do not need smell.
I personally don't want to smell orc blood.
Smell technology will not become mainstream.
You
I
and
can
I
guarantee
both know,
you that.
You and I, and I'm not at all challenging you. What I'm trying to do is get more information.
Yeah.
You and I both know that there are neural interfaces.
Yes, there are neural interfaces. For example, person I saw a year ago, very popular physics professor, or black hole technology, what's his name?
Whatever.
Wheelchair.
Hawkins.
There you go.
Stephen
Hawkins. And, you know, he has a neural device. It's a semi-neural device in his wheelchair that allows him to assist him. He has some. Trust me, I was backstage.
I know what you're saying, though. What I'm saying
but
is that's my first
neural
thing.
Interface, basically,
economically,
even
I'm not
if they
sure.
have neural interface, you
he
know, 20 years from now,
he doesn't
give even though the, if they have that, it would still have to give you the same interaction ability as typing, because they don't want to exclude those who don't want neural interface.
Well, there's another question is, do we want the other senses involved? Because when does it stop being a game and it becomes too realistic?
Like, could you not ask that question right now? We've only got two senses right now, and you and I both know people who are lost in these games.
Yes.
And I love the game. Trust me. EverQuest. I love it. But I know people who are lost in that
when it comes
world.
To interaction?
Yes.
That's because they have
world.
No sense of direction.
EverQuest.
People,
the real world is the place they eat and go to the bathroom.
EverQuest had a lot of problems with as far as feeling like you're not part of the game because it's completely static. You can't touch the ground. You can't do anything.
I know people in UO. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying is how are we dealing with this substitute
vibration? Force feedback technology.
I
don't know how many of you have force feedback, you know, controllers and such, but you know, I don't. I know a lot of people who don't.
A lot of
speech.
Yeah.
Speech is really hard.
A lot of upcoming games are using
automated. There
are
some companies out there who are doing speech to text, but the problem with that is that I find is you can't just install a speech recognition program and have it work. You know. Press install and have it working.
I'm not talking about for controlling the game. I'm talking about the social aspect of the game.
Okay, I'll get into that also.
Hold on.
I'll get it.
Larger than the
You can learn buttons, but it's more important
as
to
far
be able
as,
to
as far
interact.
As speech with interface goes, that can't be done because to get a speech recognition program to work properly to your voice, you have to spend hundreds of hours training it to your voice, and that's just not practical for gaming. Getting to what you were talking about with social, speaking to somebody, using speech instead of type, you get into limitations of bandwidth that hopefully will bypass that. Also, you get into situations where a lot of people got scared. A lot of people really get scared when you're actually talking to somebody as opposed to just typing. I mean, you get into a... to fears there, you know? A lot of people just don't feel comfortable speaking to other people, and they enjoy having the ability to type, you know? We brought this up on Hero's Journey. Yeah. Remember when I brought that up with the DSP?
Someone, that was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago, but that was the first thing that people came at me with when I proposed a practical way of bringing speech into a game using DSP cluster, digital signal processing, which is in your every cell phone out there has a DSP chip in it. And the first thing they brought up was they don't want to talk to people.
But you play a game because you don't like reality.
Yes. They don't want reality. They want a game. And that's the first thing they came at me with.
So that's the paradox. You want a game that mimics reality, but you don't want reality.
Correct.
You want life. You want life, but you want a better life than what exists in reality. It's as close as possible, but it's tinted with rosy glasses.
I want to be able to throw a fireball, but I don't want to die.
All right, let's take the guy in the back.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's his fault. Yes. Okay, getting back
could
to Derek.
Could you repeat that question,
the
please?
The reason I brought up Anarchy Online was because they're really focusing on interaction with a global storyline. And they're only going to have one world. No multiple servers. Well, I'm not sure if they're going to use multiple servers for one world. But it's they're preaching to, you know, the choir that they want one world only, and they're going to have a global storyline, and you're going to be able to, they're going to have internal governments, different governments, conflicts, all of this pre-built. The whole storyline is done for 3 years. They've got it completely written out, and you're going to be able to elect people as CEO of a company, the corporation which rules the world pretty much, the evil corporation, and somebody's going to be able to become CEO of that company. And when you get elected, Funcom is going to contact you and tell you basically what you're going to do as CEO of the company and nobody else, because they don't want to completely control it, but they want to guide it in a certain direction so that the storyline they wrote for 3 years doesn't get destroyed.
Atriarch is using a similar process. There are...
Who said that?
What do we have?
Unknowingly, yes. But they don't tell you what the story is.
No. They publicly announced that. They publicly announced that. That's how they're doing it. I'm not spilling any beans here. They aren't telling me anything. Hey, they're not telling everybody else.
If you have truly interactive characters, a storyline is moot.
You can't.
If you have an evil villain, and I assassinate the evil villain, your storyline is crap.
You can't have a solid storyline in an online game. What you can give players is background, and with background, you can take them forward and produce their own stories, their own guilds, their own conflicts.
Absolutely.
Atriarch is doing that with all the races. There are 5 races in Atriarch, all alien. It's a completely alien world that will be controlled by a single player character, the Atriarch. The rulers of the races, who knows how many people, 100,000, you never know, will be player characters. There's politics. You will rise to that position. This is a way to keep it interesting. Always have something to work for. Always have interesting conflicts, new developments going on, forming the storyline as you go along.
Anyone else see a problem with existing graphical persistent online worlds?
You.
I think the biggest problem that I see right now is the persistence of economy, especially in the EverQuest world.
Yes.
Economy has deteriorated
there
immediately
is no economy.
After it went out the door.
Yeah.
Nobody has been able to develop an economy system that could work in an MMORPG.
The problems the problems exist
or
because
as an economy as we see it in reality.
You will have the players who play 23 hours a day and hoard half the world's economy if you have a fixed, finite resources. On the other hand, if you have resources that can simply spawn every few seconds on the ground, you have a problem with everything loses its value instantly. And, something that was worth... No, it is not. It is... sorry. I lost my train of thought.
Infinite resources.
If you have infinite resources, you obviously have players picking up everything off the ground, and then suddenly, there's no point in buying anything from a store. Trading with players, there's no point in collecting anything anymore because you have a lack of... Well, it's basically the same thing as if the United States Mint started giving us $1 million bills. It doesn't work because suddenly we don't care about paying $5 for a movie ticket. As the economy so far has... just haven't worked. Bizarre sidetracks like in Ultima Online where the rares market, little glitches in the server that produce strange items, and these are the only things that are worth real money anymore in those sorts of games.
And in MUDs, there's like fluff items such as in Gemstone 3 and Dragon Realms, which go for like really large amounts of money, and those become what players spend their money on because there's a problem in these games that you don't have some. You don't. There's not much reason to get money.
Once you get the best, you don't want anything more. This is the problem.
Yeah. There's going to be a real interesting seminar coming up later during the convention on virtual property for cash, which I'm planning on going to because it's a real interesting topic. The economy thing. One of the things I do to see how solid a game's economy is I go to eBay. And I find out what the exchange rate is for silvers in that game for real world dollars. So like in our game Dragon Realms, you can currently get two platinums for $1. And I track that because if the exchange rate starts dropping rapidly, I know there's probably a bug that a hacker is abusing somewhere in the game to manufacture money. And so it's a good indication that we need to go fix something.
Before I came down here to Dragon Con, I was looking at eBay and a character, selling an EverQuest account with a level 55 and a level 47 selling for $2,500. That's a
I got
lot
that
of money.
Considering it takes, a average player a year to develop a level 50 character. An average player. Then you get into the power levelers, and that's a whole other discussion.
Does the panel think that's wrong?
What? Selling
does
online, you mean?
Does the
eBay?
That's a real good question that we should discuss at another seminar.
That's a real good question that we that we should discuss at another seminar, like the virtual
it
property seminar. We should discuss that at the virtual property seminar.
Yeah, so everyone
okay?
I've already got it marked down. I'm
okay.
Just a yes or no. Just a poll. Yes or no. Is it wrong? Yes or no?
Neither yes nor no.
I personally don't think it's wrong. However, I would never do it myself because I like the feeling of building a character and having part of my personality embedded in it.
Okay, getting back to economy. Getting back to in-game economy. Ultima Online did a experiment with what they called the Siege Perilous shard. I don't know if any of you Ultima Online people tried that shard. But the economy there developed in a radically different manner than the normal shards did, because they took out the they did not take out the ability to sell items to the vendors, to the NPC vendors, but they made it so if you sold it, they actually took out the ability to sell things back to the vendors.
Essentially,
you could not sell back to the vendors.
It was a shard
so
with
a more of a barter system developed into the game. Less than a gold. Still, there was the gold because the only way to buy houses was with gold, so people still collected gold, but less often than they did in the normal shards. They came up with more of a barter system, which was very unique for these games.
It was an experiment in game economies with a severely limited... that was Ultima Online, OSI's experiment in limited resource
what was
gaming.
It? A regrant, which was used
reagent.
To cast
reagent.
Magic. Regent?
Blah. Reagent.
You know,
yeah,
reagent.
We just read the stuff.
Reagent. Is that correct? Reagent? Okay. The Mandrake, which was on a normal shard worth, what, 3-4 gold? Or 3-4 gold pieces? On Siege Perilous, it shot up in value to like 20-30 gold pieces.
That's important to note, especially because the gold pieces themselves are greatly more valued on that server, because on that particular server, your character develops much more slowly than
yes.
on other servers. Therefore, it's a little harder to make the quick cash. In fact, a lot harder.
It made it a lot more challenging to play the game for those of you who like challenging games.
You know, I'm not really going to answer your question because it's a complex answer, but if you come to the seminar tomorrow at 4 p.m.,
yeah. We'll give you an answer tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Yeah, it's called online. It's online
yeah.
gaming and virtual property. It'll be Hanover FNG, which is where we are right now, I think. But my quick answer is sometimes. You know, sometimes it really depends. If something is my overall philosophy, regardless of if it's selling items for cash or player killing or scams or even just. One player going to another and saying, I'm higher level than you are, ha, ha, ha. When is it right and when is it wrong? In my opinion, if one player, one customer, is doing something to another customer that antagonizes the other customer so much that they want to log off and no longer play, that's the kind of behavior that I want to control because they're driving customers away. They're driving other community members away. But if the target community member has some way of dealing with it, either by leaving or having some way of getting revenge on the person, then I'll allow it. I think that would be kind of a cool thing in a game.
A lot of that, though, comes back to how that is actually controlled in the game.
Yes.
In EverQuest, they tend to boot people if they don't play by the play nice rules.
Yeah. The play nice rules are terrible in EverQuest.
Community control is an art form. It really, really is.
Real.
I know.
Real recently, EverQuest.
Okay, next topic. If you have a question, do you have a question off this topic?
Yeah, just a second. Yeah. Real recently, EverQuest was, or the GMs in EverQuest were severely embarrassed with this was on Lum the Mads. I don't know if you have any readers here, but there was a player who was banned by the play nice rules because he noticed that some of the spawns in EverQuest. Got out a pocket watch, you know exactly when they were coming in, every 45 minutes on the second, things like that. And this player got banned because he noticed this and used it to his advantage. The question is, was he exploiting the game or was he just playing smart?
Well, that's a flaw in the game.
That's a flaw in the game. There's no way he should be banned
for it. Is
it
a flaw in the game?
But
yeah, it is.
Why? If it's designed... They designed it to be that way.
Well,
is it a flaw?
Whoa, it's not a flaw in the game. Why is it a flaw that you notice what's there?
Exactly. I don't think the player is at fault
that's
at all.
That's why the GMs got in trouble.
Right.
It's
exactly.
A flaw.
That's why that was right.
Yeah, that predictable spawns are wrong.
But they designed it that way.
They said that it was wrong. Some
okay.
kind of macro.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way that
the GMs are wrong.
All right. Hey, guys.
If you had a pocket watch, you'd know.
That's it. You.
doesn't exist anymore.
In real world economies, you don't have that many players quitting without passing on their inheritance.
There's that problem.
But yes, as a matter of fact, there's an entire academic group, I think, in Arizona that is doing exactly that, studying real world economies and online game economies, and there are some folks that I'm corresponding with.
Oh, there's discussions everywhere. They've you know, I've seen some really in-depth articles written on just plain message boards that people took time to do extreme research into ancient economies, present-day economies, futuristic-style economies, you know. And it's hard to implement real-life economy into virtual-life economy.
You get that.
Okay, hold on. There was somebody back there that I pointed to. You.
Yeah.
It works. It's alive.
Hi. What do you guys think about what Sovereign's doing, which is, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, where you can have players that are on there 23 hours a day, and they're tossing around some ideas right now that you can make a session with 500 players, and there's one offensive move done every day, giving people who have, like, you know, real-world jobs the opportunity to come home and, like, maneuver their forces around, as opposed to somebody who's got, like, all that opportunity if they have the time.
Is that Earth 2150 or something?
No. Sovereign is by Verant Systems. It's a massive multiplayer online game, and it's in development right now.
Is it currently running?
Yeah, sov.stratix.com. We have a site up on it.
It's not fantasy-based. It's more like Command & Conquer.
Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't familiar with that particular. I'm familiar with Earth 2150, which is a not a turn-based strategy game similar to what you're talking about, which is currently running. Also, I just wanted to make sure that we weren't talking about the same thing.
No, it's a different one. Well, yeah. It's more sort of the idea of making a massive multiplayer online game, which is based around the model of, like, the real world, where you have only a finite amount of time to play this game, or if you have a lot of time, you can still put a lot of time into that next move. It's almost like a chess game.
That's a possible subgenre to this overall genre, but it isn't really persistent, so it's not the same thing. It won't. It'll attract a similar crowd, but it's a different game, basically.
It's as different as real-time strategy games and turn-based strategy games when you get into. I mean, it's radically different.
It has strategy, but it's different. Well, yeah.
They want to have fun their own way.
That's a problem with the advancement system. And the advancement system and the general gameplay systems have to be tuned so that you, the casual gamer, can have just as much fun as someone that's in there without a life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, the dragons. Yes, yes, yes. I strongly protest that, by the way. Okay,
that seems like a silly move
there.
To me.
Actually, I wanted to comment on the whole thing about the casual players and everything. Something that I consider is a problem with EverQuest is the fact that trying to make it more fun, they call it, they're making it more difficult for the casual player to actually play the game. There's whenever you want to do a raid, some of the raids actually take 14 hours, which is something that the casual player would not be able to participate in. And I would like to know, what do you guys think about that?
It's almost impossible to make a game that can cater to both the casual player and the hardcore player, because the hardcore player will exploit anything that's easy and will go to the end of his strings to try and better himself. Where the casual player, just looking for a good time, isn't likely to sit around for 14 hours waiting for one monster to kill to get a new item. I don't know of any really innovative ways that anyone in the industry right now is looking to deal with this problem, because other than simply having interesting things you can do at any level, you know, at any stage in your character's life, you have to pay attention to the various quests and things that you can do at any time, rather than just if you're this strong or this tall.
I'd like to add something. I like impossible things, and
We're discussing something like this on my Heroes Journey Stratix forums, and basically the idea is that you can't have a super powerful character like is in EverQuest. The difference between a level 50 character and a level 1 character is extremely.
Let me make one note on that. Impossible things. Has anybody in Ultima ever noticed how many people tried to overthrow Lord British? Go ahead.
That's very irrelevant.
But it is. It's an impossible task that many people try.
It's an ex... I don't know the adjective here, but it's bad. And that promotes the power gamer attitude, and it means that the time that a casual gamer puts in and the time that a power gamer puts in means that their characters change in their power level status, which in turn, I don't know.
It's in EverQuest, that's specifically a very extreme problem, because in EverQuest, if you had one level 50, he could kill 100 level 1 characters without noticing them. You know, they couldn't touch him, literally, as in swinging their swords, they would miss every time, guaranteed. That sort of difference in the strength of a character who's been playing for a month rather than a day should never be allowed to happen.
I think, a big difference between power gamers and casual gamers...
Yeah, try to wait for the mic before you begin to talk.
Okay. I think a big difference between the power gamers and the casual gamers would be that the casual gamers come just for a little bit of entertainment, you know, to do something, just have fun for a little bit, where the power gamers are wanting to build something.
They want to win.
They want to spend time. Like in EverQuest, it's not so much that you can't really win. You just play and play and play. And
you want to be better. That's what it is. You want to be better than...
Well, I agree with what Adam said is the fun in building the character. I would never want to buy, a level 50 character. I have fun building that character, so I want to spend time building that character versus just coming on to play for 10 minutes or half an hour just to have a little bit of fun.
I believe we've covered all points and aspects of this particular topic. I believe we need to move
on. We have some hands up that have been up for a while.
I think they want to talk.
We only have a short time. We need to cover as many topics as possible so that you can go on your own and discuss this privately.
We have some hands that have been up for a while. Get them first.
Why are we being apologetic?
Okay.
What do you mean?
What I mean by is, why are we being apologetic towards people who are, for we say, serious gamers? If you are a casual gamer and you log in once a week to chop an orc up, that's fine. Get in the game and chop an orc up. Who are we
marketing
the game to? You have to realize that the game has a purpose. Is the game going to be a virtual, perpetual online world, or is the game going to be some little bitty doodah that somebody could go in, kill some orcs, get some experience points, gain a level, gather spells, do whatever, and be done with it? Or is it going to be, as this whole little meeting is named, a perpetual online world?
It's going to be something that's commercially viable and for profit.
Are we interested?
So they want
in reality,
as many people as
money.
Possible.
Okay. So let's be honest with ourselves. Are we interested in reality or profit?
Profit. We'd like
profit. And then it's done. Then there is no more discussion.
We'd like a real world that looks nice and red with rosy glasses.
And apparently makes a lot of money.
That'd be
yes.
Nice.
There's room for other games that are not for-profit enterprises. The games that I'm doing are for-profit enterprises.
Okay. They want to say that. They want to say that, but their public relations department will not let them say that.
We're not talking to public relations department. We're talking to you. Tell us what the reality
is. Okay. Yes, it is for profit. It's all about the money. It's all about the money.
It's all about the money.
Okay, gotta change topics.
Went up
No,
we really
just hit these people. That
I just want to say really fast that there's a game that answers the casual gamer and the power gamer, and that's Asheron's Call, and that's the one that you guys never speak of. I know there are technical problems with it, but the economy in there still works because there's a constant money drain. Because if you want to play at a higher level, you got to pay for mana stones constantly, so you're always looting stuff to do that. So it makes the cash go out.
That doesn't work.
There's high level. It works for us. We've got a bunch of high-level power gamers in our group, and we've got casual people.
That's been tried. Asheron's Call is
kind of can I get a show of hands here? I'm curious. I'd like a show of hands. How many people here have played any of the Simutronics games? Gemstone, Dragon Realms? Oh, wow, that's more than I was expecting. Okay. How many people here have played Ultima Online? And how many have played Asheron's Call? And how many have played EverQuest? And how many have played some commercial multiplayer game I haven't mentioned? Okay.
Redemption.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can talk about game design and we can talk about the mistakes in Ultima Online and all those things, but I have to say, Ultima Online is a very successful product. Asheron's Call, very successful. EverQuest, amazingly successful. In some cases, you can have a really good game design but not be as successful as one of these others that has just really great graphics. There's something very compelling about them. I just want to say that.
At Ultima Online's peak, they had 240,000 clients.
I have a friend who's a coder for Verint Interactive working on the EverQuest project, and he's told me that by 10 o'clock in the morning, they have 40,000 users online and active.
75,000? I am. I have to, sorry. I did play.
That doesn't go very well on the EverQuest servers either.
I played it. All
right. Let's take that question in the back, please.
And for 3 months after beta, I tried to enjoy it with.
Okay. Again, this is getting kind of hostile. We should all calm down here. But anyways, my question was, I'm the sort of person who, I admit this is completely wrong and completely immoral as far as the gaming world is concerned, but if I can find a way to cheat, I will do it. If I can find a way to, you know, that's what I do. And I was just going to ask, I know you've covered some...
If you have to cheat, the game sucks!
I'm not saying that at all. Okay, but anyways, I'm saying that I do it, and I'm saying that it's wrong, but regardless, sometimes it's fun. But anyways, you've covered some security...
It is!
You've covered some security issues as far as, you know, moving things to server-side and keeping them off of the client, but as long as the user interacts with the client, there is a security issue. I've written programs before that manipulate the client software itself without writing a third party. And I was just going to say, this is something that someone might want to look into as far as a security issue in the future. I can grab text, grab graphics off of the window, OCR it into text, interpret that, and do whatever I want to with it. I mean, the technology is there, and I'm just going to...
Computer security is a learning thing. We can only watch what's happened and then prevent it in the future.
Just going to point out that that's something you should look into.
Okay. This guy has been waiting a long time to speak. Grab him.
What do you think about these self-run EverQuest servers where the players are able to do anything they want? You're able to set their own
place? More power to them.
As far as self-run EverQuest servers go, I haven't seen a real one yet. I've logged on and I've stood around in one zone.
I follow EverQuest wanting to see a dragon, you know. What's the percentage of people actually get to see a dragon or fire a dragon?
Very few. Because no,
I saw it at level 8. I was exploring... Yeah. That plains area before anybody else was over there when the game first began, because I wanted to explore the world. I didn't even know it was there. And I walked in that dungeon, saw giants and everything.
That would never happen now.
I was just like, that's
we had a level 4 rogue see Nagapin the other day.
I saw Vox when I was 14. I mean,
but you know, it is possible for those who love to explore. That for those who don't explore, they're not going to see very much.
Banned because I didn't see a dragon. They banned me because I complained so much.
EverQuest servers haven't really the coding for the private EverQuest servers hasn't really evolved yet to support that many users and that many different options. But the Ultima Online shards have been real popular.
It's hard for them to advance because they're not getting help from companies like OSI and Sony.
Well, that's because they steal their customers.
They don't want to.
Let's take that question back there.
Okay, one of the things that hasn't been touched here I wanted to look at is the fact that these are online role-playing games, social interaction.
Not all of them.
Well, yes, not all of them. Most of them are going under the label of a role-playing game. Social interaction is a major thing in role-playing games, and between the casual and the power gamer, there is little to none interaction. You play EverQuest, you can wander around all day and not talk to a person whatsoever.
You should have to rely on other players. You should always have be forced to communicate and interact with other players. On the other hand, you can't necessarily easily force people to, you know, group up and talk and have a role-playing experience. You can never force someone to role-play.
Well, I want to respectfully disagree with that. I think earlier asked about what's the difference between a single-player game and a multiplayer game. And I think the core of it is that when you're playing a single-player game, it's you against the game. It's you against the computer. You may run across other NPCs and other things in there, and they may be helpful. I mean, they're not competing with you, but you basically use them to get what you need to continue on with the game. And in my opinion, in a successful multiplayer game, you want to have as much as possible in the game design that actually requires players to cooperate, where they see other players not as someone as an obstacle to be overcome.
Asheron's Call, EverQuest made a great first step with grouping, and Asheron's Call took it a great leap further with their allegiance system, which is an excellent way to get players of all levels and strengths to communicate together.
And that's really good game design for a multiplayer game.
Multi-part quests where only level up to level 25 can do one piece, and somebody that at the end of level 40 can do the other piece. But the Nexus quests, you have to have people from an entire arena go out and do something as a group to put together something to get to the end game.
That's exactly the way it should be. That's what we can look forward to.
I would like to.
Well, how is EverQuest different from a MUD with pretty graphics? Why shouldn't it be? Wasn't it designed to be a MUD? You know, that's why the grouping system was made the way it was.
How many people do you run across that have purple names in their roleplayer? And then how many of those actually roleplay?
There are silly in-game disadvantages to the roleplaying tag, like not showing up on the searches and things like that.
I know a great MUD, but it's required that you have to roleplay. You have to submit character, and if you go out of character too much, they just
A lot of smaller companies and servers are. Okay, a lot of smaller servers and companies are going with the required role-playing, which works excellently if you're not trying to make a profit. The problem is your average 13-year-old sitting in his computer room does not necessarily want to role-play with other characters.
Simiatronics has a server.
I agree, but
under Gemstone, if you pay, like, what is it, $70 a month?
Oh, you're talking about the Platinum version?
Yeah, the Platinum version, where they have GMs who constantly monitor it. But you have to pay that extra, you know, you got to pay a lot to be on that server.
We've talked about also we have what we call our Prime version and our Platinum version, and we're talking about creating a Copper version where we would let everybody just kind of run crazy with no moderation whatsoever if they wanted to scam or PK or anything.
That could be interesting.
I don't know. It might be successful.
One thing that we haven't really touched on yet is permadeath. Atriarch will be enabling it, sort of. A few other games like Middle-earth Online talked about it. Win Under. So things like that. Diablo 2 is an RPG light, you know. It's great fun if you want to go in and have a good hack and slash with a few friends.
They implemented the one die and that's it.
Yeah.
That's harsh. That is harsh.
But if you design the game around permadeath as it being the game, you know, it can be done successfully without irritating the player. When you bring permadeath into it, you're bringing the irritation factor very high.
Because
a player works hard on their character, and then they die, and then it's all gone.
The casual gamer, I personally really like permadeath. I think it's as long as it's nearly impossible to die. That's what Atriarch is looking at. There should always be a downside. There should be a downside. You can get knocked unconscious and you know, mugged, but it shouldn't be, you know, snap, you've lost your character. But as long as permadeath is a good way to prevent people from intentionally doing stupid things, I think. It also would facilitate role-playing.
You could make an afterlife, and
Ultima Online, yeah, wandering around as a ghost to find a shrine. That kind of degenerated. I mean, you basically were guaranteed to lose whatever was on your body before you died in Ultima Online, unless you were right next to a healer, you know, a priest to resurrect your ghost. But other than that, the ghost didn't really serve much purpose other than to just run to town. Do you think?
And perfect scouts.
Yeah.
They were exploited in that way.
I mean, come on. You can't really kill a ghost there, can you?
Anything else?
Okay. Well, we're over time now. We're like 10 minutes past our cutoff time. But I don't see Johnny X here, so we're just going to continue this until Johnny X gets here and kick us out, which he'll do.
And by the way, afterwards, if anyone has any questions for me or I probably them too, just feel free to come up see us. This is Atriarch. That's the game I work with on Stratix.
You're making these things, the online role-playing games. Are you making the character info collected on the server or at the?
I'm personally not a designer. I work with a large fan organization.
I'm actually designing a game right now with one of the programmers at Loki, and we've decided we're going to keep character information on server side, and that we're not going to reveal the numbers. Mini games reveal the numbers, which takes away from role playing capabilities. We've decided that we're going to do away with numbers.
Atriarch is also looking at that. You should never. It's the theory that for a great role-playing experience, you should never see you had a 1 in 10 chance to hit and you scored a 7.
With the game that we're currently designing, which I call Evolution right now, we're not going to keep that name because there's currently already a game with Evolution, but it's basically Evolution. We're going to have permadeath. We're going to have free PKing. There's going to be no economy. I mean, we're going really extreme in all directions with this. I'd like to go in a little bit into it, if you don't mind. I like to present to this group of people here what we're planning on doing and see if – judge your reaction, really, because I have no real way to tell if people are really going to go for this, the
Just
common person.
Let me interject real quick. I've had a few – there have been a few questions about what the game up – a few screenshots that have been posted. That was Atriarch, and if anyone has any questions on this game a completely alien world, massively multiplayer, one gigantic server. Please just see me after this panel. I'd be glad to talk about it for any questions you have.
Yeah, once we're kicked out, we can just mill about in the hallway and talk.
Well, what this guy said right here was that there would be no economy. Is that just a total barter system, or will there be no currency?
No currency. The players will have to develop some type of economy themselves. I don't know if they'll develop some type of currency. We want to see how it evolves. They're gonna have to make it themselves. There are gonna be no towns. I'd like to. Do you guys mind if I go into this? How we're gonna set this up? Or does anybody out there object? Does anybody have any other questions before I go into it? Okay. What? Okay.
You got a snide comment.
You got something.
Did you go to E3?
No.
Yes.
Okay. She did. Okay. What's the deal with Neverwinter Nights? Mm-hmm. The game coming. Is it going to be a online multiplayer game?
It will have
limiting.
It will be. It's not really a true massively multiplayer game. I think the definition is more than two players for massive, but. It'll have two players is huge. That's they use that for two players on a modem. Anything bigger than that is new technology. But the Neverwinter Nights, I believe, will host up to 250 players in one world, possibly more depending on your system. It's as far as I know, the details on it are pretty sketchy right now.
It's pretty much going to be like a player run. World.
There will be independent shards set up. There's no there's no official giant. Company shard that you're expected to play on, which will be really interesting because that way you can have independent servers with their own storylines and their own management policies.
I don't know if you remember years ago when AOL first started out, one of the things that they offered
was Neverwinter Nights.
Neverwinter Nights. And it
this
was
is an adaptation of the original MUD in a graphical, high-tech way.
Well, I found that...
It was graphical.
Oh, wait, was?
On AOL, Neverwinter Nights was actually an extremely successful game. It was huge. It was gigantic. And then when AOL changed pricing models and, to use a euphemism, when the dust cleared, several games were gone. Some companies were out of business. Some were completely shut down, and Neverwinter Nights was one of the ones that was shut down. So the new one that's going to be created, I haven't seen any screenshots, so I don't know if it's going to be a recreation of the old one or updated graphics or what.
I was just interested because I remember playing after they went with the unlimited access thing on AOL. I remember playing it. It was so much fun because it didn't take that long to max out your character. And from that point on, you were pretty much the equal of all the other people, and you had to role play. You spent so much time on there just role playing, walking around the town square, talking
popular,
to other people.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to go out and you wanted to hack and slash a little bit, you could do that too. But there were people on there with hundreds of millions of experience points that just had to pretty much give up these characters when AOL decided to kill
them. Independent servers that Neverwinter Nights will be using. I hope that that role-playing will come in, because you will have the servers where people have played forever and will play forever, even after their characters have attained perfection, so to speak.
Actually,
one
I know...
One quick thing.
Yeah?
I was just going to say something else that was interesting that Neverwinter Nights on AOL had was that when you got killed, you got gated, is what they called it. There were gates at the beginning of one area and at the end of another at the end of the area. And when you got killed, for instance, if somebody PK'd you, which could only happen, by the way, as a result of a spell splashing damage onto you, then you got gated. And it happened quite a bit, but you only went back to the previous gate and you retained all your stuff. And anybody that has played Ultima Online knows the heartache of having 3,000 gold pieces worth of armor and all this other stuff,
and somebody loses you.
Oh yeah, somebody kills you and loots you. That kind of sucks. Anyway, yes.
Okay. Yeah, Neverwinter Nights is actually it's not very similar to the AOL version. Has anyone here played Paper and Pencil role playing? Yeah. It's actually more like that, where there's actually a dungeon master who's the guy in control of the server, or has like administrative privileges on the server, and he can take you through like a whole storyline, very similar to Paper and Pencil.
The GMs in Neverwinter Night should be able to do for us what Vampire was supposed to do for the storyteller mode, where he can interject, he can come into the NPC, he can move items around. That way we can get dynamic stories playing out, not just a game where people are walking around talking to each other and trying to kill things.
People are actually doing some of that on a smaller scale. I was over at the Imperial War remember today, and I don't know if any of you guys remember
I don't know if any of you remember a paper and pen role-playing game called Traveler. I played it religiously, and I hadn't played it in years because, you know, I went off to college and couldn't find other people that had played it. Well, this guy over there has made this interface that lets you play online. Like, one of the guys they've made this company in the last year, one of the guys lives in Houston, another guy lives here in Atlanta, and another guy lives in Dallas, and they actually play the paper and pen role-playing Traveler. And the basic books are built into this software, and it's the whole, you know, what is it, the fog, or, you know, where you can't really see what's happening. Fog of war. And it's actually happening even on a smaller scale, so that stuff is possible. It's not obviously graphically beautiful like that.
Fog of war was done very well in Nox, N-O-X. It was implemented very well in that game. If you want to see a good Fog of War, I advise you to take a look at some screenshots of Nox. Doorways, you saw an arc view through doorways. It's very good.
This, I think, applies more to single-player role-playing gaming than to multiplayer, but it does apply to multiplayer as well. I don't know if you guys know anything about natural language understanding as far as interpreting the actual meaning of a sentence rather than just looking for keywords and so forth. In single player, it would actually give you an opportunity to role play with an NPC because the NPC would understand what you're saying. And even in multiplayer, you do have NPCs most of the time. Now, the NPCs' roles are being used by other players most of the time, and of course, the humans have natural language understanding. So it's not needed as much, but it is another thing that takes another step towards realism when the things you interact with understand what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Did you have a comment about numbers, sir, in the green shirt? Did you have a comment about numbers and?
My comment about numbers is, Ferran has this thing where they will not read. My comment about numbers was Ferran has this thing where they will not reveal how many experience points you need to go up a level, how many experience points you currently have, for that matter. I honestly disagree with that. I mean, I don't think that you need to reveal what your save against something is or what you actually rolled for a hit. But knowing how many hit points you have is an important thing. EverQuest lets you do that. Knowing how many, instead of seeing the stupid bar for your experience, that's obnoxious.
I personally,
give me a hard number.
I love numbers in games. I love them. But for a role-playing game, in an online world, companies are trying to avoid them as much as possible because they want users to feel immersed. They don't want to feel like they're playing in a math game, which makes sense to me. However, I EverQuest is kind of particularly bad about
having
that.
Having a little glowing bar doesn't make me feel more like my barbarian.
The glowing bar isn't very accurate either. That's kind of annoying.
Hold on. Please wait for the mic before you start to speak.
In EverQuest, the amount of experience you'll get for a creature will change with your level anyway. Like, you get 4 levels above something, you won't get anything for killing it. So it will fill up a percentage of your bar instead of giving you a number to go on. So EverQuest is different with their experience system anyway, so I don't think that's quite valid.
Man in the green shirt.
I was just going to comment on EverQuest's bubble system. I wouldn't have so much of a problem with it if they didn't go about it half-assed. For instance, for all your spells, you're given a numeric value for the mana it takes. It takes 20 mana to cast this spell.
And you have no idea how much mana you have.
Why not just say it takes a tiny amount of mana to cast this spell if they're going to go that way?
In your status menu, you can tell the amount of hit points and mana points you have.
I will put in that the bubble system in EverQuest was added pretty much at the last minute. In phase 1 and 2 of the beta, we had solid numbers. When it went into phase 3, 4, and then release, they had changed it over to the bubbles, hoping that players would look at it as a more serious role-playing game rather than a hack-and-slash dungeon crawl, which, if they're going to do that, they should have been doing it from the beginning, planning, a little better on that sort of thing.
We have a question in the far back.
I just think that they should allow you to choose whether you want the numbers or a bubble system. Have it a toggleable deal. If you want to be a real role player, you can take it off and just use the bubble system, or if you love numbers like I do, to turn it on so that you can actually see progress.
That should be an option. I think that some people might be worried that would give the number-using people an advantage. However, chances are the role players are less likely to be interested in the power gaming anyway, I would assume.
Well, if they were more into role-playing anyway, they'd let you multi-class like Asheron's Call. You can be a warrior who can still cast magic. In EverQuest, you're a tank, you're a mage, or you're a hybrid.
We should probably be wrapping this up in a minute. We're running 20 minutes over. I know some of you have some other events to get to. Are there any last comments or questions that we need to address?
Any life or death?
That guy that was real annoying going to be coming to the
Yes.
I'm afraid I'm not involved in the next meeting. I don't know who he is.
Yes, he will be.
All right.
We're done?
Is that
We're
it?
We're done.